Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice. And again, today we're talking the power of structuring your brand legally. It's so important. You want to sustain your brand in a way that protects your goals and dreams, your ideas, your assets. At the end of the day, who you are on the inside needs to be protected on the outside. So we have brilliant legal mind, Sumaya Damar, on the show. Welcome to Unbranded, Sumaya.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're working with all types of creative people. They must stress you out. Do you enjoy working with artists and creatives?
I do. They do stress me out at times, but it's worth it. It's fine.
You also, in many ways, one of them. You have interest in fashion and so forth. So are you stressful?
I can be at times, but I get it under control. I learn to manage it.
All right. So today you're on the show. You are on a mission. Please help us save personal brands. There are far too many super talented people out there that are incredibly vulnerable, extremely vulnerable.
Absolutely.
And why do you think people don't pay more attention to it? I mean, is it because the legal stuff seems so serious that we're afraid of it?
Yes, absolutely. I think it seems too daunting and they'd rather bury their head in the sand as opposed to tackling it head on, which is what they actually need to do.
Okay. And I think most of us think you guys are just too expensive. Like one of my closest friends, she's a partner at ENS. And when she started talking about her fees and stuff, I'm like, wow, are you expensive?
Not really. I understand the plight of designers and creatives, especially as a startup business. So I try and keep my fees minimal so that I can accommodate them and their needs as well.
Minimal is relative. So if I come to you and I say to you, like, look, I've got this new concept coming out that's going to be rolled out in a book. It's going to be coming. We're going on tour. And the concept, we're going to use it as a hashtag. We're going to use this entire concept for my brand. And I'm going to spend probably, I don't know, 3 hours with you. First of all, I don't know how much time I need to spend with you, but how much per hour can we look at?
I would have to estimate on a case-by-case basis. I obviously can't charge a startup designer the same as I would a big corporate. You know, I have to take into account the underdog as well.
Okay, Sumaya, I'm Timothy Maurice, and I'm coming to you because I just wrote a book, and I'm going on tour, and the concept of this book is going to be called the Sumaya Tour. Now, you've given me the rights to this name, and I am now touring using your name because it's a name that I think is going to work and it's going to inspire people. And I want to make sure it's copyrighted. I want to make sure everything is in place. How much are you going to charge me?
We'll talk after the show. I have to be diplomatic in my answer.
Okay, it's fine. So just in terms of you know, you've been able to manage your own interests between fashion and law. Is this difficult to do for young talent from a legal perspective? Is it the same considerations? If someone wants to be a singer and a fashion designer, are there the same sort of protocols that need to be put in place to structure themselves?
In terms of a company, yes, but in terms of, but how do you mean? Is it brand perspective or what are you referring to?
Yeah, just in terms of like, if a person, I think one of the challenges people face is that nowadays everyone has so many different interests and they don't really know from a legal perspective how to go about, you know, sort of the fundamentals of building the back end of their personal brand. So more from a personal brand perspective, if I'm a singer and a fashion designer, are there the same sort of tools that I'm going to need to use?
Yes, I think you should see your personal brand as a business and build it from that starting point. So there's so many things that you need in place in order to start your business.
Okay. Cool. So why do you care? I mean, you could easily be making, you know, a large firm like my friend Lydia and making millions. Not that you're not making millions. Sounds like you may be. But you could be making more money than dealing with sort of struggling artists and people and so forth. So why do you care enough to work with people like me?
I love creatives and I understand the creative mind because my mind works both ways. So I can sort of bridge the gap between creativity and the analytics of law. So why not do it?
Okay, cool. So as the middle class grow, competition for ideas, you know, infringement cases are increasing. What are some of the first steps a artist or someone should take to position themselves in the right legal framework?
Compliance is key. Before starting out a business, there are so many acts and policies that are required by law. So it's up to each person to research which acts applies to them and make sure that they are compliant with those acts.
Okay. So, you know, I want to make it very clear that this is not a luxury. This is something that people really need to take serious. So for a young, talented person who's tuned in, why should they listen all the way until the end of this conversation?
Because at the end of it, I will give you the tips and tricks that you need to get your business up and running in a legal way.
Awesome. And right now, what are some of the catastrophes? Obviously, you can't mention any names, but what are some of the real sad things that you've witnessed in terms of people who are a personal brand, but they've really sort of positioned themselves for failure?
One of the major things is copying, and people steal each other's trademarks or designs or even business names, and there's so much of that going on, and including concepts and ideas. Well, you can't really protect your ideas, but you can protect your concepts. So they don't have any agreement in place, and this you know, comes to bite them
sure.
at a later stage.
Sure. Yeah. Let's go through a number of case studies and scenarios, okay? So let's look at a singer and a manager. You know, we're in a small market. Yes, South Africa is growing and it's booming and things are really starting to happen for a lot of artists, and people are really starting to make money and they're real celebs in South Africa. But at the end of the day, the dynamic around being a manager for Taylor Swift versus someone here locally, it's just a different dynamic. The level of income. So oftentimes that the small market dynamic causes people to work very informally and they don't have contracts and structures in place. If a singer, for example, has a manager, what type of basic sort of contract should be in place between a singer and a manager?
Between the singer and the manager, the basic contracts would be, it could be an MOU or service level agreement. Just everything needs to be set out in a contract.
Okay, wait. Because you start with legal jargon and you guys like... So MOU is memorandum. What is it?
Oh, understanding. Yes. It's a memorandum of understanding. Yes. It's a working agreement between two parties.
And it's really not that deep, right? It's just basic terms that say, look, one or two pages. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is how we're going to go about it. This is time frames. If you leave, this is basically what it outlines, right?
Depending. There is a lot of legal jargon, and there are a lot of clauses that go into a contract to make it legal. So this is why you need this in place, because if these clauses aren't there, then the contract won't hold up in court. So it cannot be too basic, but it does not have to be too cumbersome either.
So you can't be in the contract talking about, yo, this is how we're going to roll.
No,
this is how we're going to roll.
Definitely not. The court will just throw it out.
But that's not fair. I think that's really sort of like, it's just like, if that's how people speak, that's how they speak. And they're just trying to get their stuff together and have a contract. Why do we have to speak the way you speak?
That's why the world needs lawyers, so that we can interpret the language.
Okay, that's why you're on the phone, right? All right.
Pretty much.
Okay, cool. So right now, in terms of some of the challenges around, one of the big things that's happening is brands are starting to use people as influencers to really sort of expand their footprint and also give them credibility amongst a specific demographic. This has become major, and it's becoming, I mean, there's different tiers as well. So there's the full-on ambassadorship. There are people who are seen as sort of friends of the brand, and there's people who just sort of are roped into a campaign. At what level should there be some sort of agreement put in place when it comes to a brand and a personal brand leveraging each other?
At the beginning, from the get-go, you should have the agreement in place, like whether it's an endorsement agreement or a service level agreement, whatever the case may be, it has to be from the beginning so that each party is covered.
Okay, let's talk through some of the terms. I'm gonna give you another specific case study, okay? So, as Timothy Maurice, I've been approached by, let's say, Adidas. And Adidas is like, look, we think you can help us create the next Yeezy. In fact, we believe it can be bigger than Yeezy because you're humble. And so I go to Adidas and I sit with them, and they say, all right, let's try this out for 3 months without any legal agreement. We're going to pilot this. What should I say? Should I just call you immediately?
Absolutely. You definitely need a contract if you're going to do something as big as that, or even something smaller, you still need a contract in place because many things could go wrong.
Okay,
You know, there are
but what needs to be on
scenarios
the,
are endless.
because we don't know, like I'm just talented. Like I don't know what needs to be. I don't know what needs to be on this paper. So what are some of the things that needs to be on this contract?
It should state basically the relationship between the parties, who's providing what's needed from each party, everything that has been spoken about at the initial meeting needs to be documented and put into the agreement.
And then who should bear the brunt of the risk, and how do you put that on the paper?
The risk is determined by the parties, so it would be between you and Adidas, and thereafter put down on paper. But by putting it down on paper, you minimize the risk of anything going wrong, and that nothing will go wrong. If anything does, then you have a solid legal document in place.
So if you come up with a really cool term, like, I mean, there's been a lot of dispute over who was the first person to say, for she's in my kneesy, for example. Like, is there a way to copyright this? I've seen where Trump is trying to, copyright basic terms in America, various language. How do you go about, I mean, is it even possible to do that? Something as informal as social jargon.
Well, you can trademark certain words that are specific to you or your business that you can use. You can even trademark your hashtag, believe it or not. And celebrities have trademarked the weirdest things, like Beyonce and Jay-Z have trademarked Blue Ivy, so
Oh, really?
the child's name. Yeah, so you can trademark things. It just ca it, it there's a very specific limitation for the trademark. Like, it cannot be a color or a descriptive word or general term. It has to be something unique and that hasn't been trademarked before.
Okay. And at some stage, there was a Google had some sort of trademarking thing. I don't know if it still exists. But you were able to sort of like, if a word hadn't been used before, you'd be able to Google market. Do they still have that?
I doubt it.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
it was fairly popular at some stage around 2009.
Well, yeah, I don't think that it would carry much weight in court anyway because, you know, Google is so broad that
Got
even
it.
if, like, yeah, I don't see it happening.
Okay, cool. So, what are some of the challenges in terms of regional issues? Africa is a big place. South Africa, is a large country as well. If I'm in Cape Town versus Durban versus Joburg versus East London, are the laws the same? Are there the rules apply? Are they just the same?
Yes, the laws of South Africa are the same. Africa has its own laws. But the interesting thing is when it comes to intellectual property, which is trademarks, copyrights, patent, and design, South Africa belongs to the Berne Convention, which is a treaty signed by many different countries. So your work can actually be protected in other areas of the world as well.
Let me just make sure I'm clear. You said you can trademark a hashtag.
Yes.
Okay.
Depending. There are very specific requirements to trademark a hashtag, but it is possible. It can be done.
Okay. Let's come up with one. Something really cool. Okay. Let's come up with something now that we probably should take serious, that we could take from this conversation and think about trademarking it. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, so you work in law and you're in fashion. I have a background in fashion and personal identity, corporate identity, and so forth. So if we're working together on a project, right?
Yes.
We could help brand legally sound fashion designers.
Are you legally sound fashion designers?
Yes. So
is that the hashtag?
No, we're still coming to the hashtag.
Okay.
So if you think about the concept and what we're doing is we offering fashion designers a way to be positioned legally in a way that's really going to change their life fundamentally, and they're going to separate themselves from other, and we're going to have them create fascinating concepts, creatively position themselves, but they're going to be legally sound. So we've got this association now. So we're going to go about this campaign and we're going to hashtag legal designers now. And they're going to focus on designing for the legal fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
So we got this tag, legal designers, and we're doing this incredible campaign across Africa where we're inspiring people to think differently. I mean, inspiring designers to come on board who want to design for lawyers. So if we want to go about trademarking legal designers, you're saying that's possible?
Yes. If it hasn't been trademarked already and if we are associating it with our brand, then it is absolutely possible.
Wow. And the first step in doing that is what?
There's a whole process involved, but so you've got to make sure that nobody's using it and doing our research and apply to the trademarks office and
okay.
From there. Takes a while, yeah.
Got it. Okay, so let's talk about time frame. So someone's listening, they want to contact you and they want to start taking the brand serious enough to get all the sort of copyright and legal trademarks, everything in place. They contact mm-hmm. you, they contact you now. What is sort of the time frames that they can sort of expect relative to positioning themselves legally?
Firstly, they have to understand where they fit in. Like there are four different types of intellectual property law in South Africa. Patents protect inventions. And it's like if they're inventing something, then they apply for a patent, which takes months. Trademarks protects your business name, your logo, corporate identity stuff. And that also takes a couple of months. Copyright, you don't have to register because it arises automatically. So it protects artists, designers, photographers, musicians. Their work is naturally copyrighted as long as it's recorded in material form, like a painting, a sculpture, or a disc, and as long as it is original.
Okay, so
and design law also is a whole aspect to it where you can register the aesthetics of a design.
Oh wow.
Also takes a few months.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
So whoever designed this sort of like Kosa sort of that pattern could be rich now, like their whole family could live forever. I mean, because that thing, I mean,
yeah, also, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, if they had patented back in the day, I mean, if that was even possible. But that's interesting, you because there's so many talented people. I mean, what percentage of creatives do you think have taken the legal part of their brand serious?
A very small percentage. I'd say about 5 to 10%.
Wow. So 90% of the people out there, potentially even listening to this, haven't taken this conversation serious at all.
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately not, yeah.
All right, cool. So we're talking Sumaya Damar. Am I pronouncing your name properly?
It's actually Sumaya.
Sumaya. Sumaya. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Samia. And so we're on Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice. If you're listening now, we're talking positioning your personal brand from a legal perspective. And as the world continues to change and evolve, your personal brand has extraordinary potential and power to be able to influence the world. But there are considerations and ramifications around the legal aspect of building your brand. So we're talking to Samia.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, cool. So I want to know, especially because I think that there are levels where people, you know, it's like only at a certain level, people don't have to pay taxes because they don't make enough income, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing sort of applies when you start talking about the legal side. At what point and how much income and how much revenue and how serious does the idea have to be before they start thinking about your services?
The thing is, when you, as a designer, you don't want anybody stealing your designs or your
Okay, so the Skype call just got cut for momentarily. What we're going to do is we're going to get Samaya back on the line in a moment. But if you're listening, one of the key considerations to building your personal brand is knowing where you're going. How far are you trying to take your idea and how serious is it so that you can be extremely confident knowing that you're protected and that everything is set up for you. We're going to go to a quick song. And we'll be right back in a moment talking to Samaya.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
We're back on Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and we're talking the legal side of building your personal brand, protecting your goals and dreams and your ideas, making sure all the copyrights, patent laws, everything are in place. So we're speaking to Samaya Dmar, who is SA Fashion Law. That's how she sort of brands herself. And I'm fascinated by that. Why do you choose to brand yourself if you work with so many different fields, Samaya?
Because nobody has heard of fashion law in South Africa as yet. I mean, it's developed throughout the world except for South Africa. So I thought, why not create or pioneer fashion law in South Africa? And so it's quite a new concept to us, but it is open to other creative industries. So it's just the name that's sort of
okay. Yeah. Got it. And who are your favorite types of individuals and personal brands to work with?
My favorite types of brands. I love working with designers, photographers, creatives, just basically anybody as long as they have clear business ideas and. Yeah, I know where they are going.
Okay. And mm-hmm. you're based in Cape Town. The fashion industry is evolving fairly dramatically. There was a men's only sort of fashion week recently. Did you attend?
Yes, I did. SA Men's Wear Week.
Okay. And were you there looking for clients? Why were you there?
I was networking, as one does. So, yeah, I met a lot of potential clients as well, which is good.
Okay.
And also the fashion and the men.
I saw on Twitter where someone is like, look, this is expensive. This is expensive stuff. And you haven't given us any numbers. So they told me, unless you give us some idea of how much you charge, I should hang up on you. And I don't really want to hang up on you. You seem like a nice person, but I think I'm going to have to if you don't give me at least some idea of how expensive you are. A range.
My range. Okay, I'll give you an hourly rate.
Yes.
It could be anything from 500 Rand per hour to 2,000 Rand per hour. But I also am going to do pro bono work.
Pro bono work with like...
depending on if such designs, yeah.
Okay, so the pro bono work obviously will be for previously disadvantaged people.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm also
so I'm still working on that concept. So yeah, the criteria is yet to be determined. And no, I don't think you are. Well, maybe you are.
Okay. So let's shift to social media. But social media is the world now, you know, people call it new media. It's not new anymore. That's number one. Number two, it's also not a, you know, a fake world. It's a real world. I mean, people break up, they make up all the time on, you know, I mean, you know, in fact, I don't know anyone recently who met their partner in person. Just about everybody I know recently I've met online. And I'm talking about like everywhere I go, because I'm curious in human behavior and so forth. So social media has become a powerful force. If someone post their photos. I mean, I heard that if you post on Instagram, there was some guy who had a art, you know, he had an installation in an art gallery using other people's photos. And there was nothing they could really do about it because apparently in the clause is when you post, it's no longer yours. Is that true? How do you feel about that?
With regard to like items of artwork in the background, they are violating copyright laws because the law states basically if something is incidental, like if the say for example if it's a sculpture like the Nelson Mandela sculpture in Joburg, and if it is incidental and there's a picture where it's in the background, then there's no violation. But obviously if you are publishing somebody else's work of art, then it's a copyright violation.
Okay, so let me be clear. If I am in Cape Town, I take a photo of the mountain, and there's no incidental, it's direct. That was my goal, take a photo of this mountain. I post it on Instagram, somebody takes it from somewhere in New York, and they decide that this is amazing, let me put it as a part of a... But isn't it how they contextualize it? Because if they contextualize it as they are doing an Instagram installation, and not necessarily just showing my work, then can't they get away with it?
In terms of, well, it's not really, it is a violation of copyright, but it's something that's very difficult to control because of the way the world is moving and because of social media at the moment. I mean, things are being shared within seconds. So the more apps like this come along, the less able you are to, you know, protect your copyright. But there's still a violation. And if you feel strongly about your photo being exhibited somewhere else, then you should absolutely go after them.
Oh, wow. You think they would have a good chance? Okay.
Unlikely. But it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort, but, you know, might be worth your while.
Got it. All right. So let's just go back a bit, because I want to talk about, you know, the average person, again, in a small market doesn't have a lot of income to be able to invest in this sort of strategy. So for the average sort of photographer, an artist, singer, anyone who has a talent, an author who wants to, you know, publish ideas and really put concepts out there, or someone who's just a speaker and they want to go on tour and they have an idea and they want to use the hashtag, someone who's sort of starting up, how many hours, you don't have to tell us an amount, but how many hours would they need to spend with you? And do you do Skype calls, or do they need to meet with you in person?
I do Skype calls. It would take about an hour or two, depending on their requirement. But, can be done.
Do you see yourself quitting law at some stage and just become a full-time designer? Is that where your heart is?
No, I design just as a hobby and just for fun, just for myself. But that just explores my creative side. But I think I would miss the analytical challenge of law.
Okay. So you split your left brain, right brain, like in the middle.
Yes, I use both sides.
Okay. And what type of design work do you do?
I like the avant-garde couture style things, you know, feathers and lace and all things vintage. So that's kind of, my aesthetic.
Okay. And so let me just be clear. You can design yourself, right?
Yes.
And who would be one of your muses?
One of my muses would be Marilyn Monroe.
Okay. Okay, cool. So as we sort of move to a close, you said you're going to give us a top 10 tips, right?
Yes.
To sort of help someone position their personal brand. If you're just tuning in, we're chatting to Samaya Damar, who is a lawyer who positions herself as sort of, you know, the lady of justice of essay sort of fashion law, but works with all sorts of creative and artists. And she's very reasonably priced, I must say. I was expecting you to be more expensive, so I'm very happy to hear that your rates are reasonable. And you really do have a passion for talented people and helping people sustain their goals and dreams by protecting themselves legally, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So give us some of the tips. Give us, can we do a countdown from 10 to 1 from the most to the most serious? Let's get a build up, a drum roll type of thing, okay? So look at your notes quickly. I'm going to give you a second. Look at your notes. And, you know, I've got coming up at the end of the show, we've got Rianette Lebowitz with cyber health feature. Rianette, just quickly, have you sort of gone through the legal, have you positioned yourself with the safety net and cyber health? These are unique concepts and so forth.
Yes, and it's so fascinating when you start looking at the legal side. And it's tough to keep track of from a social media app point of view. It's tough to keep track because they change their terms and conditions quite often. And we just do the updates and accept these terms and conditions. And sometimes we actually give them access to our devices and so forth. But the legal side is really important. And I think this discussion has just made me aware again that there might be some areas that we need to revisit.
Yes, cyber health. That's a new, unique concept. Have you searched it? Are other people using this term?
The cyber health term?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of, Tim. I haven't actually gone and do a big research about it, but I will do today.
Okay. So, Samaya, if she uses cyber health on T-shirts and she puts it on, starts using it as a brand and they're posting it everywhere, what does she need to do to protect herself?
She should register the trademark on it so that it belongs to her.
Is there a website she can go to? How do you begin registering?
Speak to me.
Okay, we'll speak afterwards, definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
It's the lawyer in me.
Yeah, clearly. Okay, cool. So everyone who wants to learn from this and your tips needs to contact you. What's your website?
It's www.safashionlaw.co.za.
Safashionlaw.co.za. Are you on social media?
I am. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and just started an Instagram account.
Okay. Have you? Okay. Awesome. And what are the, using the same name, SA Fashion Law?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. We're ready for your 10. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay, so these are the 10 things. Drum roll, please. There's no drum roll. This guy running the boards.
Okay.
Number here we 10. Go. Number 10.
Number 10. Get your ideas down. Record them in material form. Like I said, ideas cannot be protected. So if you write them down like a book, or if you paint them, sculpt them, design them, get them down so that it can be protected.
So you get them out of your head on paper.
Yes.
Got it.
That's
first, number 10.
That's the first step, yeah.
Okay.
And
number 9.
Next thing is, number 9, have a confidentiality agreement in place or non-disclosure when dealing with anybody, suppliers, manufacturers, potential investors, partners, etc. Have them all sign this agreement so this ensures that nobody steals your design and get away with it.
Okay. So wait, so we need to sort of frame. These are the top 10 things to protect your personal brand, right?
Yes.
Okay. So number 10.
Yeah, this is going to save you in the long run.
Yeah, so, big time. Number 10, get your ideas in place on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number 9 was again?
Confidentiality agreement is key.
Number 8.
Do thorough research. Make sure you comply with all of the South African acts and policies, because there are so many in South Africa and you don't want to be violating the law before you even get your business off the ground. So research, research, research.
Okay. Number 7.
Number 7 is make sure there's a partnership agreement in place if you are working or collaborating with other artists or designers, etc., because this ensures that you both parties are protected, and it's often like, you know, a new marriage when everybody is enthused with the early excitement of the potential of growing their business, and then a few years on when the business is doing well, the partners need to decide for the first time how the income should be split, etc., or how it should be used, and this creates a lot of difficulties. So get a partnership agreement in place if you are dealing with more than one people.
Got it. And again, I want to stress that these, you know, these agreements and so forth don't need to be 75 pages long. You know, like the Apple, when you have to agree to the Apple. I was scrolling down recently on iTunes just because I was bored, just to see. I'm like, this is serious agreements. Like, these are very...
Yeah.
Do you read these agreements? Like, I mean, be honest. Like, if
you I do, click because, on an update, you know, it's annoying me.
But wait, you're trying to tell me you get
it. Unless
I'm
in a really, real hurry, and then I just scroll, you know. But most of the time I do, actually... skim through it.
Okay. Okay, cool. Number six.
Number six, register your business. So everybody needs to, when they are creating their business and they have the idea and the concept and the business name, etc., go to the CIPC and just register. It doesn't cost that much. And if you are BEE compliant, apply for a BEE certificate while you're registering your business. It, like I said, it doesn't cost that much, and it takes a few weeks to get to you, and then you are secure.
A few weeks, that's it. 3 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Now we're getting into our top five, and we've got literally about 2 minutes left, okay? So let's go. Okay. Number five.
Number five, protect your intellectual property. Trademark your logo or your business name, and make sure if you have an invention, try and patent it.
Is there a website we can go to for this?
You can try the CIPC as
CIPC
well.
CIPC again, okay.
But your best bet is to go via a lawyer or attorney, because it's a long, long process. But trademark your logo.
Okay, awesome. Number four. Yeah.
Number four, put all of your agreements in writing from the beginning. It is very difficult to enforce an oral agreement. So I know everybody deals with a handshake, but you've got to formalize that handshake. Everything has to be in writing and signed
by
both parties.
Formalize the handshake, because there's so many handshakes that just not serious, that are not serious. Okay, cool. So number three.
Number three, spell out your terms and conditions. Cash flow is crucial. So you want to tell your customers when to pay, how to pay, etc., and not just leave it to them to just pay you whenever they feel like it. So make sure that you write out your terms and conditions and think about it clearly.
Yeah, this is, you know, so many relationships fall completely apart because it's not clear what they expect. Okay, number two. Wow, we're getting down to the last two.
Number two, employment contracts are essential, because obviously if you're going to have employees, you need them to sign contracts, but make sure that you're compliant with labor laws as well. So, but yeah, employment contracts are key.
Awesome. And number one, this is it. This better be big.
Number one, okay, you have to stay updated with the law, because acts change, policies change. As we know, Parliament happens every single year, so it's up to you to keep informed and keep your business compliant with the law. So
awesome. Well, Sameha Damar, thank you very much. You are a brilliant young mind. We're very sort of fortunate to have you on the show. South Africa's fortunate to have you doing the work that you're doing. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work, and we look forward to seeing. Is there somewhere we can also go and view your fashion? Is that Instagram?
Not yet.
Okay.
But maybe I'll put it out there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you should put it out there. Cool. I mean, I think it would be
good
for you.
Why not? Thank you so much, Timothy.
Thank you. All the best.
It was a pleasure being on the show.
Thank you. So you can follow Sameha at SA Fashion Law all over the internet, and we would like to encourage you to contact her directly if you need to put your systems in place. So, Rianette, we are shifting to cyber health. We know you've got yourself together. You're very sort of legally minded. Give us what you have for us today.
Thank you so much for joining us today with the Cyber Health Bite with me, Rianette Leibovitz from SafetyNet. When it comes to cyber safety and cyber health, and the way human behavior is being impacted by technology, I really think that we can learn a lot by listening to what the millennials have to say about it. And so, by the way, if you didn't know, millennials are aged between 19 and 35. So I just missed it. Anyway.
Exactly. A couple days.
Just a couple of days. So technology company ASUS, which is driven by innovation, conducted the ASUS Millennial Consumer Global Survey in June 2015 with market research firm Edelman Berland, and it involved 2,630 of these millennials. So they also looked at people across five regions. So this was part of a Luxury on Your Terms global marketing campaign. And I really love the name, Luxury on Your Terms campaign. And this was designed to support the launch of the ASUS ZenPad. And it's a premium Android tablet featuring interchangeable covers, fun, that allow customers and consumers to personalize their devices. So what did they find? The results of the survey reveal that millennials perceive luxury in a different way to previous generations, showing that they still enjoy owning beautiful products. However, they consider unique experiences and time as modern luxuries. And I have to agree. So maybe there is a little bit millennial in me. Time is a luxury. In the United States, 37% of the millennials surveyed define luxury as having the time to do the things they love. While in India, 40% said they see luxury as the ability to do things in their own way. So, in a nutshell, these results indicate that instead of seeing luxury in terms of material things, young consumers associate the idea of luxury with personal time and freedom. And they believe that devices like tablets help them enjoy everyday life and do the things that they love the most while providing a sense of freedom and free time. And it makes sense because it's light and easy to carry around, etc. Additionally, more than 50% of the millennials surveyed see tablets as connecting them to something bigger. And 4 out of 5 respondents expected to pay or to buy a tablet within the next 12 months. So it would be interesting to see how many of those surveyed in 2015, June last year, have actually gone to do this. So if you are selling or you need to engage with this target market, remember that they value convenience, quality time, and unique experiences more than acquisition of material goods.
They're not just lazy.
Physically, maybe, but their thumbs are very busy on social media. So it is great to see that ASUS listens to the market by offering the ZenPad, and they've got a new Zen book series coming out. And I think when we really embrace the new technologies that are out there and we match it with consumer behavior, and I want to urge people to even consider cyber health and how we use this and when we use it and how often we use it, then it's really becoming a really beautiful scenario and picture which connects us to each other in a different way, but still being conscious of the impact it have on our lives. Okay. So, yeah, if you want to have some more information, please visit our Safety Net Facebook page, and it's SAVET. Net, because we want to save lives by creating awareness for responsible digital engagement.
Absolutely.
And thank you for joining us today on this Cyber Health Bite with me, Rianette.
Thank you so much, Rianette. We really appreciate all of the insights you've given us, because it's really important that people recognize they need to be proactive about protecting themselves and not waiting till catastrophe happens online and they realize they've lost their job, the kid is in trouble, the kid's been hijacked because they didn't have systems in place. If you look back over while you've been doing the cyber health feature and you've been researching and looking deeply into the insights around protecting yourself online, what are some of your favorite moments over the history of doing this over the last year?
I would say to see the emphasis that is being placed on this issue, especially cyberbullying and harassment and so forth. I mean, there's even a Safer Internet Day. So it is really nice to see that people are giving attention to it. And schools are also sitting up straight and saying, let's look at this topic and make sure that we have our policies in place, that we do understand what it means, etc.
Okay. And you speak on the subject at schools and so forth, so people can contact you. Can they email you directly?
Yes, they can email me. It's info@safetynet.com or find me on Twitter at Rianette, RIANETTE.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Rianette. Thank you so much, Samaya, Damar. And we hope that you protect yourself both online, protect your personal brand. This was the Protection Show. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week with Unbranded.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.